Welcome to MTE's Plugged In podcast. This podcast focuses on the world of electric vehicles. We combine expert interviews and personal stories to educate and inform listeners about electric vehicles. So whether you're an early adopter who has been driving an EV for years or you're just starting your research, this podcast is for you.
Hello, I'm Brandon Wagner.
And I'm Amy Byers, and welcome to Middle Tennessee Electric's Plugged In podcast. Today, Brandon and I are excited to welcome Chris Jones to the podcast. Chris is the president and CEO of Middle Tennessee Electric, so welcome, Chris.
Thank you. What took so long for y'all to ask me to come?
I know, right? you have definitely been at the forefront of things. I mean, we could not have built this program. It would not have been as successful without your support, so we do really appreciate that, and we thought, you know, we need to... Why have we not had him on here? We need to get him on here.
It's fine. And I have been watching. I mean, you guys do a great job with that. And, of course, I'm due no credit for the advances we made and the things we're doing relative to our members with EVs. I mean, you know, Brandon and so many of our teammates who are leading this charge, the innovations they've put forward, the ideas, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. And Amy, you coordinating this and getting the message out to our members. I mean, it's important for members to hear. We're trying to create a conversation. So thank you guys for what you're doing.
Definitely a conversation and definitely a community. We were talking about that earlier, about the community that we've created through this EV movement. But before we get to EVs, let's talk a little bit about you and your role here. You have served as CEO and president for about 12 years now, correct?
That's, yeah. I'm starting my 12th year right now. So.
Yes. But yes. Before that, you were in definitely the marketing communications
right.
world. So just tell us a little bit about your journey.
Sure. So thank you for that. And it's my honor to serve in the role that I do. But I've been at Middle Tennessee now for 25 years. This is my this May will be my 25th anniversary at MTE. And I came here in 1999 as a communications coordinator. And so, and Amy, I've known you through those circles for a number of years. So I appreciate your professionalism and your friendship and how we've been able to work together. But so my background is in communications. So I came here, and part of the beauty, as you know, part of the beauties of a role like that is that you are, you have to, but you're able to learn a little bit about every different aspect of the business. So that afforded me a great opportunity to learn about something I didn't know so much about, especially some areas in particular of the business, and allow me to meet a lot of different people. And again, I knew it coming in, but it just outlined very quickly to me the virtues of the work that happens at an electric co-op, an electric utility in general, but here specifically at an electric co-op, where, you know, we're delivering a vital service, and we do it in such a way as to make a positive difference in the lives of those we serve, or for businesses to make their business better. So there's just so much virtue to that. So I was, immediately attracted to the idea of making this my livelihood as long as I could. So I've been very blessed in that regard. And I went from there to ultimately becoming a director or a VP of a department. And again, I was blessed in that regard. Frank Jennings, my predecessor, who hired me in that role, who was the VP at the time, became the CEO of MTE. And then I became the VP and worked with a number of good friends for a number of years and was in that role for about 10 years. And then had the opportunity to vie for the role of CEO. And I was fortunate enough to be selected. And again, it's hard to believe it's been now 12 years right at it, but it has been. And, seen a lot of change in that time. And but again, the virtues that attracted me to this business to start with are still very much in play. You know, we exist, and in fact, maybe more than ever, we need to focus on the idea that we're here to make a positive difference for those we serve. And whether it's through innovation or, just being engaged in community or whatever the case may be, that should be our guiding compass.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about the years that you've been here, and you know, we go back 25 years, I guess,
right.
When you came here. So we go back a long time as well, and we've seen a lot. Like we have seen a lot of different changes. You know, when we started, you know, people were out, you know, walking up to every single house with a little book and writing down the meter readings, you know? I mean, we've come in through lots of different transitions of how we read meters to where now we just are in the office and it just does it automatically. So a lot of things has happened. And under your leadership here at Middle Tennessee Electric, we've had obviously the AMI, the smart meters, the providing the broadband services with United Communications, merging with Murfreesboro Electric, which is how I was able to join the team and how I knew you in my other life as well. And then, you know, agreeing to the long-term partnership with TVA. Those are just a few. So when you look back on your time here, tell us a little bit about your vision for MTE and how these and other initiatives have helped you achieve that vision.
Well, so something that was important to me when I came into the role of CEO, even though this was kind of existing out there somewhere, was to bring forward and to verbalize what our vision really is. Mm-hmm. And to me, again, it was kind of hanging out there, but to me, it was fundamentally and simply about driving to the highest levels of member satisfaction that we could, you know, to be world class in that regard. And there are ways we can measure that, and we do. And we measure that fundamentally through J.D. Power. We use other survey mechanisms as well, and we have in the past. But it really drives to that point that that we, you know, what better measure is there for us to know we're successful than to know that the members we serve, and we exist simply because of them, that the members we serve are very highly satisfied with what we do. And so when we think about all those initiatives, it really is as simple as when we think about trying to, you know, whether it's innovation or pursuing a certain avenue of strategy, it all comes back to looking through a filter is, will this make a difference in the satisfaction of our members? Will this make their life or business better? And so as simple as that sounds, it's also profound, I think, it has to pass that test. So when you, and we'll pick one out, United Communications and fiber broadband. Now that's very different. That's not electricity. So how is that satisfying our members? Well, you know, our members were asking us for years about, especially those in the rural area, we can't get internet, can you help us? And at that time, we really couldn't. State law prohibited us from even venturing into that business. So you know, we set off on a course to work with our legislators and the governor to change the state law to allow us to do that. And we did that. Then we had a decision to make on, in terms of how we would execute on that. And we were fortunate enough to have United Communications in our backyard, and we came together with them, you know, working very closely in that partnership. And since then, we have brought high-speed internet to thousands of our members that didn't have it before. Now, those members are much more highly satisfied than they were before with MTE because of what we have done. But there's also the aspect of the fiber technology, and we've implemented lots of technological advances. And again, those advances should be guided by, is this going to make a difference for our members? We're not going to just, you know, go where the technology tells us. We want the technology to come in and help our members be more satisfied. So the fiber optic infrastructure that we're putting in place through United will allow for a more robust and reliable electric system. So the correlation may come later as far as the general membership being more satisfied with a higher level of service. But again, the decision that led to that acquisition of United Communications came from the notion of this is good for our members.
And you know that, when you're sitting there telling me about how you decided to get, you know, bring in United and provide the broadband, I mean, that really is the co-op story. I mean, you go back, what, 85, 86, 80 plus? I don't know.
87. Coming up May the 11th.
Oh, my goodness, I knew it. I was so close. Math is not my strong point. But if you go back that 87 years ago, why was Middle Tennessee Electric formed? Because the rural community wanted electricity. They wanted it, and they, you know, got together, formed the co-op to bring this service that they wanted that was not being provided to them. And that's kind of what happened with the broadband. You know, the people spoke and they, you know, came to us because, you know, we've been there. That's how we started providing a service to the rural communities that didn't have it. And so it's kind of come full circle and a little more technology-based thing, but definitely a full circle moment, I think.
Now, Chris, I wanted to ask you, we're talking about industry disruptors, and you said several years ago, I remember you saying, I want us to be opportunistic about industry disruption. And specifically thinking about electric vehicles, obviously that is a major disruption to the way people get around, and MTE plays a role in that. I was hoping you'd share a little bit more about what do you mean by being opportunistic?
So what we tend to do, and it's kind of the way we're wired, and I use that, you know, that term, you know, because it has those symbolisms, but really the way we're wired as an electric utility sometimes is to be, more often than not, to be reactive. Mm-hmm. You know, we just, you know, we build a system and we're going to maintain it, but if a storm hits, we go out and we fix it, and we, you know, we're putting things in place and then we react to them later. And we tend to, when new things come on the horizon, we tend to be reactive. We tend to try to find ways to push back against it, to say no. Even the term disruptor, you know, that's a term that's more on our side of the fence than whoever else is coming in, right? Sure. Because we tend to say, okay, that might be a problem. Well, why does it have to be that way? Let's think about whatever, if it's a technology or if it's an idea, rather than just reacting to it in a by default, a negative way. Let's think about what this could mean for the benefit of our membership. Again, back to that notion. So, and more often than not, I think that sometimes the things we classify as a disruptor is going to be something that's going to maybe challenge the way things are, mm-hmm. but it also is going to create an opportunity for way things can be better. Now, maybe not every time, but at least let's not just simply react to it in a negative way. Let's see what might be out there that could influence a better experience or quality of service for our members. And you know, EVs, a case in point here that we're talking about today, obviously, is one that, again, from an electric system, electric utility, traditional standpoint, we tend to think of, okay, here are the problems it's going to create. We tend to default to that. But there are so many opportunities as well. And again, Brandon, you've been good to accept that charge, if you will. I think you would have accepted it if I hadn't said those words. But to think about how we can make, we can utilize that, we can be opportunistic to make those, to make that better for our members, to take advantage of the technology. So that's the essence of what I would mean by that.
Yeah. So as the world changes, business as usual may change and processes may look different, but it could be very beneficial to the organization and everyone involved. And I know I've heard you speak a lot, and you're very quick to give recognition to our board about understanding that business as usual sometimes changes. And I was hoping you would share a little bit about the board's role in strategy, not just EV strategy, but in these situations where technology requires us to be adaptive and think about things differently.
So, for the benefit of those maybe who don't know what the relationship or the nature of our board is, it is a board that is elected by the membership. They are the representative voice, literally representative voice, of the membership in the operation of the cooperative. So they set policy for the cooperative. And they have one employee, and that's me, and I interact with them, and of course they are wonderfully supportive of the things we put in place, but they're also, you know, they're safeguards of the membership. So I would say in this category, how I would say that is that there will be some aspects of electric vehicles and the implications of electric vehicles and their potential implications on the grid and power capacity and all those things that they would be concerned about. But also, they are very quick to encourage me and by extension our team to be innovative when it comes to the service to our membership. And again, driving to highest levels of member satisfaction. So they're going to encourage us to become as educated as we can on the subject, and to become as innovative as we can toward the higher satisfaction of our members. So I think EV would be a classic example of that. They want to hear and understand before they make, you know, any kind of quick judgments on how they're going to support us. But they have been, with the things that we have in place right now, whether it's the EV Car Club or the new rate, the night flex rate that we have, or whatever that we have put in place, and I think we've taken some things on the forefront and been more outgoing, if you will, than a lot of other utilities, not all of them, but a number. They have been supportive of that, and because we have come to say, we're going to try this, and here's why, and they say, if it's for the best of our members, let's go for it. So I appreciate their support.
So you mentioned balancing concern with opportunities, and there are certainly some concerns with EVs and adoption curves, but can you speak a little bit about what those concerns are and how yourself and the board are thinking about the future of EVs and taking that concern into consideration?
So we could get into some specifics that you would be better versed at speaking to than I would, Brandon, okay? And so that's why I'm glad we have you on the team, you and others on the team. There's some things I would say in general to start with, though, and that is that the subject of EVs tends to be one that can be politically driven, it can be emotional. So I think it's important that, you know, I used that term a while ago, education, that we become as educated, as knowledgeable as we can be on the subject, and that we in turn encourage the same from among our membership. Because like with many things today, there are many assertions that can be thrown out there that don't necessarily, you know, hold up to scrutiny. So one thing that I've encouraged our employees, and I've also encouraged members when I've had the opportunity, is that we don't assume a default position of fear when it comes to EVs, because we have seen in, you know, relative short order a lot of opportunity, this to the benefit of our members, and we have realized a lot of opportunity in things we've put in place very quickly. Now, the question always comes, well, what if you know, there were 100,000 EVs on the system tomorrow? And well, that's not realistic. You know, that's not going to happen that way. It's interesting how that, and we all know this is a matter of practicality, that we tend sometimes from a the standpoint of government to become a bit aggressive, and we put policy out here and say, okay, this we want this to happen. And but then the market will say, okay, that's fine if you have that policy, but I'm the market and I'm going to do whatever, you know, whatever the consumer says. And so we're seeing those things kind of come together a bit right now, and the market is kind of saying you're trying to move things too fast. And we have always felt like that we are going to have adequate time to adjust and learn and put steps in place that are measured, that make sense. And so far, that's proven to be the case. And I expect that to remain to be the case going forward. You know, we're going to be very careful in things that we do, but we're also not going to be afraid to try a few new things, and again, to be as opportunistic as we can for the benefit of our members. But back to the point I started with, I want to emphasize again that we become as educated, as knowledgeable as we can. So a number of things we've put in place, we've done so simply to learn, to be better equipped to then in turn advise our board and our membership on what to do.
Yeah, it goes, you know, we've talked before about wanting to be the energy expert. You know, we want to be the person that the members can go to have, you know, we're not trying to sway them one way or the other. We just want to be that honest source of information that they can trust, you know, whether that be for heat pump information or EVs or, you know, whatever they need. We're just trying to be that expert for them.
That's exactly right.
So one final question. I know we talked about, you know, we've been around for a while. We won't revisit that again. But, you know, when I think about when I started and probably when you started, I mean, I never thought we would be where we are right now with so many things and how just the world is different and, you know, not just the EVs, but a lot of different technology that, you know, when the pandemic started and we started doing all the Teams meeting, you would see all the Jetson cartoons and they were like, oh, the Jetsons had it right because, you know, all this Teladoc and all that stuff, they were doing that on that cartoon. But, you know, we never thought that was, you know, cartoon. We never thought that would be realistic. So now we're sitting here, 2024, and you're looking forward. So what are you seeing as maybe the next 10 years for MTE? What is your vision for that? And what are your hopes for our membership and the communities that we serve?
So it's something to think about, huh? I mean, you think about, like you mentioned, Amy, wow, the change in last 25 years, just phenomenal for our industry and for our communities. We've grown so much here in Middle Tennessee. Across our service territory, its population is probably twice what it was in 25 years ago. So it's compelling to think about what the next 10 years could bring. And you know, we tend to think about things in, I think we've used the idea before, Brandon, in our conversations, that we tend to overestimate what we can do in 1 year, but underestimate, you know, what can happen in 10 years. And so I don't want to sell those 10 years short, but something I certainly want to say is that strategically, you know, when we think about strategy and what that really means, I don't see MTE's strategy is really big picture strategy changing. In fact, I see us really doubling down on that, if anything. And what does that mean? Well, strategy doesn't necessarily have to do with technology and things like that. It can, but for us, it is about member experience. It's about delivering on that satisfaction component we're talking about. So I think it becomes even more important as things change, as the pace of change accelerates, that we are honed in on, if you will, intimacy with our member and that experience that we have. So I would not foresee that changing in the next 10 years. I would see that even becoming more enhanced. So what does it look like, you know, 10 years? What does you know, technology look like? And I wish I knew. I don't know. You know, I think all the things that we're seeing in place, whether it's smart home, you know, we use the term smart a lot, but smart home, smart grid, all the pieces to it, whether that's EVs or the technology we have in our hand or on our person, or, you know, I think we'll continue to see those enhanced, get smarter, better, hopefully cheaper. We'll see. I think the subject of the day in the utility business right now is very much capacity. You know, do we have enough electricity to go around? And that's front and center. Back to the next year, I mean, that's all the conversations, many of the conversations, most of them anyway, I'm having in the industry space are about looking to making sure we have enough energy to supply the demand that's out there and that's coming and that's growing. So I can assure the members that we're working very hard alongside TVA to make sure that we have that capacity here, and we've got a lot of work to do. But it's exciting to think about the changes that could come in the next 10 years, no doubt.
Chris, speaking of capacity, I know that Governor Lee recently appointed you to the Tennessee Nuclear Energy Advisory Council. Can you share a little bit about what that council does?
Sure, and honored to be on that council as I'm the local utilities representative on that council. And there are about 20 people or so on that council, and against an advisory board that exists to think about, you know, what stumbling blocks might be out there to prevent Tennessee from leading and continuing to lead when it comes to nuclear energy. And obviously Tennessee has a rich history that you know, dates back to Oak Ridge, and then of course TVA building nuclear plants. And when we think about the capacity we need in the future, it's hard to imagine a long-term future without more robust nuclear energy. And so when we think about that from the standpoint of just simply providing more power to satisfy demand, or we think about it globally, about national security and the fact that there are players on the stage right now that are going to be seeking to gain a market, and America wants to be the leader in that, and we should be. Well, Tennessee should be the leader in America because of our history, and we have an opportunity. So it's about, you know, hopefully building more nuclear plants to satisfy the demand, but also kind of the ecosystem that surrounds that, the supply chain, the businesses that go to support nuclear energy, locating here in Tennessee, being an economic engine for Tennessee. And there, many people don't know, there are more than 200 companies right now that are sited in Tennessee that support nuclear energy. Not the plant, not the nuclear plants, but the companies around it. And so we have a unique opportunity, and I think really a responsibility as a state to lead. So we are meeting together, and these represent people from academia and from the nuclear industry and energy industry, and thinking about ways we can enable that kind of a future for Tennessee. So we've got a lot to think about, and it's exciting, but more to come on that. We have a report due to the governor at the end of October will be the next report due to the governor. And hopefully from there, we'll have recommendations that can be put into place, and we'll kind of grow from there.
So, Chris, thank you so much for being here today. It was very, very informative, and I'm sure all our listeners really enjoyed listening to it as well.
Well, thanks to everyone for listening today. If you have any questions about MTE's EV Ready program, night flex rate, or anything EV related, email us at evcarclub@mte.com. For more information on MTE's Drive EV programs or the EV Car Club, please visit driveev.com or email us at evcarclub@mte.com. Until next time, plug in, power up, and drive safe.
If you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a review. Also, we would love to hear from you. If you have any ideas of topics you would like for us to discuss, please email us at driveev@mte.com. Thanks for listening.